Brett Johnson on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is a Wednesday afternoon, also joined by Eric in the production booth. Eric, did you get your Trump bucks today?
I have not gotten my mail yet, so I don't know. I'm looking forward to it if I do.
If you're getting your snail mail, don't count on that, because those aren't expected for a few more months, especially since they could be delayed, since apparently Donald Trump wanted to personally sign the actual physical checks that are going to be mailed out.
Awesome.
Of course he did, yeah.
No, I think I should be direct deposit, actually, now that I say it out loud.
See, I thought that, too. I have my bank account on file with the IRS. I've had several people on social media posting that they received their Trump bucks, but I have not yet. So, yeah, don't have my $1,200 yet, which, as I've mentioned on previous shows, pales in comparison to what they're doing in other countries for economic stimuluses. But we only get $1,200 one time, and that's pretty much it. Coming up on the show today, we have an agreement in the Minnesota State Legislature on emergency insulin funding that is finally going to be happening. Also, Donald Trump wants his own radio show. What could possibly go wrong with that? And we'll also be talking about some other topics, including what happens if a presidential candidate who has a majority of the delegates were to drop out of the race. That is applicable to both Joe Biden and also Donald Trump. So we'll do some civics and talk about that coming up in the second half of the show. But first, I'd like to revisit a topic that we touched on Monday that has to do with some workers in Hennepin County that are facing some tough choices. They are library specialists that are represented by Ask Me Local 2822, and just a few days ago, they were given a tough choice from Hennepin County, where they could either go work in hotels, which were turned into homeless shelters, or be forced to use their PTO because they would no longer be allowed to work remotely. So joining us now to talk more about this is Allie Furman. She is the president of Ask Me Local number 2822 as she joins us now. Allie, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So before we dive into what the county is proposing to your workers, first up, can you give us some background on who exactly library specialists are and what exactly you guys do? Because it sounds like they're a little bit different from librarians, correct?
Yeah, so library specialists are the folks who shelve your books, pull books off the shelves to send them to your library if you request them. We make library cards, check out books, check them in. We're kind of the book jockeys, and then we do all sorts of other kinds of work, helping people with computer questions, other technology questions, and some basic reader's advisory. So we do a lot of things, but our primary work is with the collection.
Gotcha. Okay. And for the last few weeks, it sounds like you guys have been working from home, but of course you guys recently received a letter, though, from Hennepin County Administrator David Hogue saying that, well, that no longer would be an option. Instead, he said that library specialists could apply to be redeployed to a homeless hotel, and those who weren't able or willing to do that would have to start using their paid time off days or PTO days, and should they run out of PTO, then they could borrow up to 240 hours of leave and then go into debt with the county. So in other words, PTO debt. And their final option would be to take unpaid leave. So on the surface here, Allie, this sounds like a really lousy deal and kind of a lousy choice that you guys are having to make.
Yeah, it is. It's really unfair. A lot of our workers were doing outreach work while they were working remotely. So our biggest concern is people who lack access to the internet and vital services, as well as families who are trying to educate their kids from home. So a lot of the work we were doing remotely was around bridging barriers to access to technology and doing outreach work for people who really need our services and doing that remotely and over the phone.
Yeah, and it sounded like, as I was reading about in Workday Minnesota and also in City Pages, the librarians are saying there's still plenty of work to be done remotely. It's not like you guys were running out of things to do from home, correct?
Right. People were compiling housing resources, like I said, working on work teams on how to get community members access to technology. We have an Ask Us phone and virtual chat service. So people can, you know, if you don't have internet, you could call in and say, I need, you know, the number for public assistance or unemployment. Those are really vital phone lines, and they pulled all of our workers off of those shifts, answering phones and virtual questions from patrons.
So did they give any reason for why this was necessary to do, why they are forcing you guys to make this choice between, well, essentially working on the front lines in a very high-risk area, which, as you've written about, too, in some of those Workday Minnesota and City Pages articles, it's certainly very important work, but it's also very tough to do. You guys are facing that choice of having to do that versus using your PTO or potentially become unemployed. Has the county given any justification as to why they've moved in this direction?
Well, they're saying that we weren't doing meaningful work before they took our work away from us. And then they are having trouble staffing the hotels, and also they want to expand library curbside pickup services. So instead of prioritizing reaching out to our people that are most in need, they're prioritizing getting access to libraries to people who currently have materials on hold on the shelves. So that is currently what's happening. There are 8 buildings currently doing curbside pickup. We absolutely support access to our materials, but in this time of crisis, that should be virtual materials and not increasing transmission of the disease between workers and the public through circulating materials, physical materials.
So talking more about this possible transfer of some of your workers to working at these hotels that are now housing people who are experiencing homeless, what's important to point out is that obviously you guys don't have any formal training on how to be put in this type of situation. It's probably something that's better suited for someone that has training in terms of social work. And then, of course, you have probably some concerns about making sure you get the proper protection as well, working at these types of facilities.
Yeah, we are not trained social workers, but the bigger point is that this should be a completely voluntary job. And it's extremely important work, and I have coworkers who are there. This is their vocation. You know, they've worked in homeless outreach for a long time. And there are some, you know, one of our stewards, you know, she had a calling to go do this, and she went and voluntarily did it. But the majority of people are doing it. No one should be forced into doing it. And also people should be getting hazard pay, because other people are able to work remotely, and all of our workers who are working on the front lines at all of our facilities and at the hotels should be getting hazard pay, because they are risking their lives and their families' lives every day when they go in, and they should be honored for that work with extra pay.
So what kind of time frame did the county give you guys in terms of trying to make a decision on whether you're going to use your PTO time or go work at one of these hotels?
So the timeline, they announced on March 31st, it was a Tuesday, that we would no longer be able to work remotely starting Sunday, April 5th. We had till Friday at 5 p.m. to sign a legal document saying we'd be willing to be reassigned. They actually didn't make any public statements to the workers directly about what the work would be. We found out about what the work was through a meeting with labor relations and a number of question and answers that we received from them. So this we communicated to our workers and more broadly so that they knew what the most likely options were. But that's where the majority of our workers have been placed who have been reassigned. We were given less than 3 days. Some people who don't have access to internet and email were given less than 24 hours. We were told nothing about the tasks or the jobs we'd be performing. We didn't know what the implications of signing the form meant. we found out later that workers are eligible if they're out of work for a federal leave, but workers who declined reassignment are not eligible for that leave. So we got tricked and had very little information and had to make a life-altering decision. It was really distressing.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine. What have most of the workers decided to do? Have some been using PTO, or some have some decided to go to the hotels? And if some are at the hotels, what sort of tasks do they have you guys doing over there now?
Some workers have gone to the hotels. Some workers are working in the curbside libraries. Most of the jobs reassigned, a very small percentage of the 300, I believe it's somewhere around maybe 50 people total have been reassigned, but not all of them to permanent or full-time work. Some of the tasks at the hotels is taking temperatures, delivering or handing out food, running errands. I'm not exactly sure of all the details, but that is what I've heard. The big piece is, again, though, that people cannot actually make a choice if they don't really have options. So
yeah.
Going into debt to the county or choosing to do this work isn't really a choice.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, and you hit the nail on the head right there. It's certainly very important work to do, but no one should be forced to actually do that. A couple other questions for you here, Allie. Do you know if they've provided you with proper personal protection equipment if some of your staff are working in the hotels?
Yeah, from what we understand, our steward has told us, yes, they do have proper equipment, but we know that no matter what the equipment, the risk of exposure is still there.
Mm-hmm. So what happens next in the process? Have you guys been talking to Hennepin County to try to see if you can work out some sort of mediation or agreement? What's going to happen next now?
The county has refused to negotiate with us. We spoke with them. We received a letter from Marion Green a couple weeks ago that she will not negotiate and the commissioners will not negotiate with us over any of the terms and conditions of these actions. What's next for us? We continue to fight and we've been winning things even though they won't negotiate with us. We actually, our executive board last night voted unanimously to endorse a call to end curbside pickup at the libraries and the drive-through service center work at Maple Grove because we feel it puts workers and the public at risk unnecessarily to provide services we could be providing virtually and safely. So we're actually calling for an action this Friday at 12:30 p.m. at the Ridgedale Library parking lot. We're asking people to come in their cars and put signs in their windows in support of workers. We're saying that our lives are more important than physical books right now, and we're asking for community support.
Excellent. Okay, so that is Friday, 12:30. That is at the Ridgedale Library, correct?
Yep.
Yep, easy location to get to as well, right off 394 and also, I believe it's County Road 61. So easy location to hopefully get to in terms of transportation. Allie, I know this has certainly been a tough situation for you and your union. Again, Ask Me Local 2822, but do wish you guys the best of luck going forward, and hopefully we can get some good news in the coming days and some updates on the situation. But Allie, really do appreciate your time today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We have open phone lines for the rest of the hour, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. But as we're talking about, I'm very uncomfortable with the fact that people are being forced to work in these types of facilities. I mean, it's certainly work that needs to be done, but no one should be literally forced into that type of situation. We'll continue more with FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We'll talk about what's been going on at the state legislature, also get into some national news, and take your phone calls as well if you'd like to chime in on any of the topics we've been talking about, including what's been happening with the Library Specialists Union. It's all on the way next on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
We When you need legal assistance, let the Minnesota Lawyer and Referral Information Service help you find the right attorney. It's a new and enhanced program of the Hennepin and Ramsey County Bar Associations. They have professional, experienced referral counselors who can connect you to vetted attorneys practicing in employment, real estate, wills, taxes, and much more. Take the stress out of finding a lawyer. Call 612-752-6699 or go to mnlawyerreferral.org. The right call for the right lawyer.
Hi, I'm Scott Peterson with the Minnesota News Network, inviting you to join us for Minnesota Matters, a weekly program covering everything that matters in the North Star State. This week, COVID-19, we look at the impact the pandemic is having on Minnesotans, what the governor and lawmakers are doing, how to cope with the stress, the economic impact, and what we can all do to help. Tune us in right here or at MinnesotaNewsNetwork.com.
Listen to Minnesota Matters every weekend, Sunday mornings at 6:30 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, this is Mark Bython with Rudy Luther Toyota in Golden Valley. Rudy Luther Toyota remains open to support other essential services, such as medical workers, first responders, and countless others. You can rely on us to take care of vehicle repairs or replacements. We can pick up and deliver your car to keep it going, and you can handle your purchase transaction, mostly online and by phone, to make it easier and safer for you. We are diligent with sanitizing the dealership and your vehicle, and we are 6 feet apart. Please let us know how Rudy Luther Toyota can help at RudyLutherToyota.com.
A comfortable home means more now than ever. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning can help you save up to $2,700 when you buy a new energy-efficient furnace and AC in April. Find out more about this deal and their no-contact protocol at standardheating.com.
Minuteman Press Uptown is still open. It's printing everything. But they are taking some extra precautions. You can order by phone or online and do curbside pickup. Plus, they can help restaurants staying open with direct mail and geofencing. That's Minuteman Press Uptown.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. With coronavirus, I hope you're holding up well. Thanks for keeping your radio tuned to AM 950. This is a challenging time for everyone, including us here at AM 950. Right now, it's so important to keep AM 950 on the air, ensuring a progressive radio voice is in Minnesota for the 2020 election cycle. The best in progressive talk lives here with Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, Brad Freeman, and of course, the local hosts like Brett Johnson, Robert Pilot, and myself. To make sure AM 950 keeps broadcasting, we need your financial support now. Head over to am950radio.com and sign up to support with however much you can. Your assistance will help keep AM 950 on the air. And Brett and I will be personally thanking listeners who contribute on our shows. Head over to am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com. Declare yes, I want to support AM 950. From everyone here at AM 950 and from me personally, thank you very much. And thanks for listening to the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So we finally have an agreement in the state legislature on emergency insulin funding. This has passed both the House and the Senate and is now on its way to be signed by Governor Tim Walz. So let's run through some details on what actually is in this bill. And this comes to us from Peter Callahan over at MinPost, friend of the show and also a frequent guest. So the bill requires manufacturers of insulin to provide insulin at no cost to individuals or pharmacies for emergency access and has increased penalties on those manufacturers who fail to comply. And that's an important detail we'll get into in just a couple of moments because that's where we could potentially have some problems with this bill. It was a relief to Nicole Smith Holt and James Holt after the House finally approved the bill as they were part of the coalition that was spearheading this effort after their son unfortunately died from not having insulin to help treat his diabetes. It's House File 3100. It passed by a margin of 111 to 22 in the House, and the Senate responded with a unanimous 67-0 vote. So like I said, 22 members of the House voted against it, and you can probably guess who one of the members was who voted against it. Everyone's favorite Republican representative, that would be House Minority Leader Kurt Dowd. Dowd said the funding mechanism in the current bill was better than the license fee that had passed out of the DFL-controlled House earlier this session, but he said it was unnecessary since companies had improved their programs and implemented other measures to make insulin affordable to those without insurance. Not really quite buying that. I would ask anyone who currently can't afford their insulin if the manufacturers have really done enough. But I'm sure he's probably getting a nice check there from the pharmaceutical lobby. The core of the compromise bill goes back to last summer when Senator Eric Pratt, he's the Republican from Prior Lake, suggested using existing patient assistance programs run by insulin manufacturers to provide a supply for those who meet income requirements. Those are the programs that you often see referenced on like those late night television commercials for drugs when the announcer at the end of those ads says, if you can't afford drugs, we might be able to help. At least I sometimes see those when I watch one of my favorite channels with my over-the-air cable is Comet TV, since they show a lot of cheesy comedy and B-roll science fiction movies. You kind of get some of those funny infomercials on there. And I've seen those ads before where you see those commercials that say, if you can't afford your drugs, we might be able to help. So those programs have been in place for a long time, but they faced a lot of criticism for not really helping enough people and for having very erratic rules for who qualifies. So to put pressure on the companies to participate in Minnesota's own program, those that skip being in Minnesota's program that would provide emergency insulin would be fined. And here's where we get to the important details. The fines would increase as non-participation in Minnesota's program continues. So it would be $200 per month for 6 months, then increase to $400,000 per month for the next 6 months, and then after a year of non-participation, the fees go up to $600,000 per month. Now, originally when they were talking about this bill, they were largely unsure on what those amounts should really be. And that's the important detail right here, because if you are sitting there as an insulin manufacturer, you're a for-profit business. And if you look at these fines versus participating in this program and providing free insulin to Minnesotans who are struggling to afford their insulin, you're going to perform a cost-benefit analysis. If at the end of the day, it costs you more money to participate in the program than what you would pay in fines, well, guess what? Those companies are just going to sit there and pay their fines. It's a simple cost-benefit analysis that businesses do all the time. So the real question is, are these fines actually enough money to incentivize companies to participate in this emergency insulin program? Now, the industry opposed that provision, arguing that it is unconstitutional, taking of personal property under the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. I'm no constitutional expert, but that would seem to be they might have an argument right there. But the authors of the bill say the alternative would be, all right, you want to go challenge this in court and let's say you get it overturned. The alternative would be then facing a tax on insulin, which would end up being something that insulin manufacturers would probably like even less. So yeah, at least from the perspective of insulin manufacturers, it's probably a case of that being the lesser of two evils. Now, what happens with the bill? So let's say you are someone who is in need of emergency insulin. So the bill creates an emergency supply for 30 days for diabetics who need insulin now and can't afford it. Also sets up a longer-term program for those under certain income limits and don't have insurance, or they have insurance that have really big copays. Both have the companies providing the product either by resupplying pharmacists or sending insulin directly to patients, but that's only if they determine that doing so would cost less than paying that fine. So I guess at the end of the day, that's a step in the right direction, but there still certainly are some concerns I have with that bill. It still goes out to those fines. I would like to know how those fines and those amounts that they calculated came to be. And then, of course, I kind of have some issues as well in terms of, well, how do you qualify for these income limits? Who qualifies for those? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to fall through the cracks. But I guess at the end of the day, it's probably better than nothing. And I suppose it does give legislatures something to talk about on the election campaign as we head into the 2020 cycle. But yeah, there could certainly be some improvements in that bill, and who knows, maybe we could see some during the next session. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Have a few more local stories to get to, and then also want to talk about civics. Do a little civics lesson on what would happen if either Joe Biden or Donald Trump were to unexpectedly drop out of the race. How would a nominee be determined? We'll talk about that and more up next on AM 950.
Hi, this is Chad from AM 950. I'm here with Ryan, owner of the locally owned Snap Construction and arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor in the metro. Ryan had to call in for this ad because he's practicing social distancing. So what is Snap Construction doing right now to provide a safe working environment?
Thanks for the introduction, Chad. I am at home practicing social distancing, watching the little man, and trying to get a little work done here at home. Once again, thank you to all the AM 950 listeners who have worked with us in the past. Your support has been tremendous. Chad, the safety of our homeowners and our team at Snap Construction is the absolute first priority. Right now, we are offering a free no-contact estimate for roofing, siding, or window replacement. Through video chat, email, text, we'll deliver your bid to you without face-to-face contact. Lock in your historically low labor and material rates now and build later. No obligation. You can cancel any future work with no cost or penalty.
For a free no-contact estimate, call 612-333-SNAP.
I'm Candy Broffel, publisher of the Twin Cities edition of Natural Awakenings magazine and host of Green Tea Conversations, a new show for people who are on a journey to take responsibility for their health and play a more active role in their family's well-being. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I interview local experts who share the latest in natural holistic approaches in a fun and informative way. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. This week's featured idealist is Chef Jose Andreas, who's created a nonprofit to feed the survivors of natural disasters, including COVID-19. The big interview is an encore of my interview with AM 950 owner Chad Larson. And in the C block, I talk about rippling to other humans and my third daughters. Ellie 2.0 Radio, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hey, I guess we found a new name for our show.
Really? What's the new name?
Pilots Progressive Party.
How did you ever come up with that?
Pilots our name and progressive fun is our game.
Well, what's that about?
It's a one-hour news show with progressive guests and information you normally don't hear on the radio.
Well, that's so exciting. I have a few ideas for guests myself.
I know they'll be progressive.
Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on AM 950.
The progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, this is Mark Bython with Rudy Luther Toyota in Golden Valley. Rudy Luther Toyota remains open to support other essential services, such as medical workers, first responders, and countless others. You can rely on us to take care of vehicle repairs or replacements. We can pick up and deliver your car to keep it going, and you can handle your purchase transaction, mostly online and by phone, to make it easier and safer for you. We are diligent with sanitizing the dealership and your vehicle, and we are 6 feet apart. Please let us know how Rudy Luther Toyota can help at rudyluthertoyota.com.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Tonight, a slight chance of rain after 4 p.m. with a low around 22. Tomorrow, cloudy with a high of 42 and a low of 25. Friday, sunny with a high of 48 and a low of 35, while Saturday will be sunny with a high of 60 and a low of 36. With the state having closed bars and restaurants for dining in, it's especially important that you support our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants, featuring high-quality local foods, unique dishes, vegetarian options, and so much more. These restaurants are locally owned, so the money you spend stays local. Find all the restaurants offering takeout at eatlocalminnesota.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So yeah, ultimately what it comes down to with that emergency insulin bill is that funding mechanism. That's where the big disagreement was. It comes down to the fact that these manufacturers of insulin have to participate or face a fine. And like I mentioned, depends on whether participating in the program costs less than the fine versus just overall having a tax on those insulin manufacturers, which would be a guaranteed way to fund the program. So only time will tell if this program actually ends up working in the future. Also, some news in Minnesota, some local news to talk about. And this is something that I think we'll probably hear more about on Robert Pilot's two shows. One of them is, of course, Pilot's Progressive Party, which is coming up today at 5 o'clock. And also his show, Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, which is every Saturday from 1 until 3. But this has to do with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, because faced with the pandemic disrupting daily life, the MPCA has delayed a set of tough new vehicle emission rules and is offering flexibility on meeting regulations for hundreds of businesses affected by COVID-19. But the MPCA is still moving ahead, largely as planned, with environmental reviews on another project that would be the very controversial Line 3 pipeline. They did extend the public comment period for Line 3 by just 1 week. Now, the reason why the MPCA is saying that they still need to keep business as usual for the Line 3 process is that if they don't, it would potentially turn over the permitting process to the feds. And of course, being that you have the Trump administration in the White House, they're afraid that the regulations set by the feds would be a lot less stringent than those set by Minnesota. So that's the justification that the MPCA is giving for moving forward on the permitting process for the controversial Line 3 project. Winona LaDuke, who is a frequent guest on Robert Pilot's show, was quoted in the MinnPost piece as saying that, well, we really need a public comment period on Line 3 much longer than 1 week. So I'd expect you can probably hear a lot more from Winona on one of Robert's shows coming up in the near future. Again, he has I'm Awake, which is every Saturday from 1 until 3. And then you also have Pilot's Progressive Party, which airs Wednesdays from 5 until 6 p.m., including his show today. So looking forward to that. Before we get into the civics of what happens with Biden or Trump if they were to unexpectedly drop out of the race, we do have our buddy Randy in St. Cloud. Kai wants to chime in on a topic today. And Randy, what are you thinking about?
Well, now that you brought up Line 3, I started thinking about that. But it's always done just amazing to me that to say people taking, say, campaign donations from pharmaceuticals or from pipeline companies, mm-hmm. that's a bribe. And people say, well, you're being rude. You know, are you saying that money is making them, it's going to change the way they vote? I think that's rude.
Is that even a question? Does it change the way they vote?
Companies do it for a reason.
Yeah, they wouldn't do it. I mean, like I was talking about, they do cost-benefit analysis all the time, and they wouldn't be wasting money on politicians if it didn't change the way they voted. It's a very simple concept.
And, I mean, the amount of money that lobbyists spend gets paid back, you know, times 5,000. Mm-hmm. And there's stats all over to show that. But to say that in public, you're rude. And it's just, so people dying is okay. Mm-hmm. That's just civil discourse. But to say somebody's taking a bribe, well, that's really just beyond the pale. That's rude.
It's just lobbying.
That's the same it's the same with Line 3.
Oh, you just don't respect the discourse, Randy.
Yeah. I do not respect the discourse because the discourse is manure. Mm-hmm. I very carefully chose my words.
I mean, manure helps things, so we'll see.
It's good.
I like Eric playing the devil's advocate over there. I think Eric might have a future as a lobbyist over there. You got some good talking points.
How can you argue against manure
lobbyist?
Yeah, manure lobbyist. I could be a manure lobbyist. I can talk manure forever.
Hey, appreciate the phone call, Randy, and hopefully we can hear from you on another show. So, Eric, you're planning on going in and being a spokesperson for Big Manure.
I have no qualms with that. That seems like a pretty harmless
And as you said, there technically are some benefits from having manure. So, you know, there you go. Eric, the spokesperson for Big Maneuver. Big Manure. Man, I can't talk today. I called you Derek.
Yeah, your head earlier?
Yeah, I must have bonked my head or something, or maybe I'm coming down with COVID-19 and getting those headaches. All right, Not a joke, I don't have any COVID-19 symptoms. So let's do a little civics lesson. We haven't done civics for a while on the show. I was promising we would do that with some frequency when I started FYI Politics. But then, of course, the coronavirus happened. Then it kind of threw the entire show plan out the window. But do want to talk about this a little bit, since it's been a pipe dream for a number of Democrats to say, well, what happens if we could put Andrew Cuomo on top of the ticket instead of Joe Biden? So what would be the logistics behind that, and what would actually happen, let's say, if there is some sort of unforeseen circumstance that would force either Joe Biden or Donald Trump to drop out of the race? What would happen? Well, there's a couple different scenarios, and it depends on when it would happen, because you have the scenario on if it would happen before or after the convention, and as you can probably imagine, things get a lot more complicated if a candidate were to drop out of the election after the nominating convention. So let's talk about this, as 538 wrote up a nice piece on this today. So basically what would happen, let's say as we're heading into the Democratic National Convention in August, let's say for some reason Joe Biden says, you know what, my health isn't feeling quite up to it, and I'm no longer going to run for president. I'm not seeking the White House anymore. So if this happened before the nominating convention, essentially it would come down to how the delegates would decide to vote. Now, what would likely happen is that if Biden already had picked his vice presidential candidate, that person would very likely be the nominee, since as of this moment, Joe Biden has a majority of the delegates. Those delegates would probably go for whoever Biden would end up endorsing after he dropped out of the election. Now, of course, things would get a lot more complicated if, God forbid, he were to die or something like that. But I still imagine the Biden supporters would probably go and coalesce around someone who has similar types of views as him. And by the way, the same thing would be true, let's say, if Bernie Sanders had a majority of the delegates and he were to drop out of the race, the same thing would happen, where Bernie Sanders' delegates would probably go and coalesce around someone who is like-minded in terms of policy views. As for the Republican Party, this is according to Richard Pildace, who is a constitutional law professor over at New York University. He told me that, or he said in the article, that they do specifically bind delegates to a candidate, which means they technically can't change their vote. So let's say Donald Trump were to drop out of the race for some reason. Well, technically, the Republican delegates would still be binded to vote for Donald Trump, which would create quite a mess for the Republicans, since they would likely have to amend their rules. So ultimately, it comes down to what the delegates would end up deciding. So if Biden or Trump were to drop out, their delegates would probably end up going for whoever their candidate endorsed, or the vice presidential candidate, or whoever espouses similar views as either Trump or Biden. But here's where things get really complicated. What would happen if Trump or Biden were to drop out or to have a very unfortunate incident where they would be incapacitated after the nominating convention? That's where things get really, really hairy. So under the Republican rules, the RNC could reconvene the national convention, although according to Richard Pildace, who is the NYU constitutional expert, he said it would be hard to imagine that being feasible, where you would fly everyone back in for a second Republican National Convention. He would say, he would basically predict that, again, the RNC would probably amend their nominating rules. So what would happen in terms of the Democratic Party if Joe Biden were to drop out after the nominating convention? Well, turns out it would largely go to the DNC, who would decide ultimately who the nominee would be. So that would certainly be a path forward for, say, oh, I don't know, Andrew Cuomo or whoever Biden's vice presidential candidate would be. But that would certainly be a very unprecedented scenario if you were to have a presidential candidate drop out of the election or become incapacitated after the nominating convention. Things are a little bit simpler if they were to drop out before the nominating convention. So a little bit of civics for you. Do want to talk some vice presidential politics in just a second. But first, let's get in Stan from Minnetonka, who wants to chime in on Andrew Cuomo, who is, for some folks, the pipe dream candidate to take over for Joe Biden. Stan, what are you thinking about with Andrew Cuomo?
Well, you know, every question is just a statement, and the statement I'm making or the question I'm making is, you got a better guy to do Governor Cuomo's job?
Yeah, I don't
He's
think...
He's doing a hell of a job.
He most certainly is, and of course, New York
is an...
will
they yank him out of there?
Yeah, and who would take over would be the question, because if I remember this correctly, I don't think New York has a lieutenant governor. So I think it would go to some member of the legislature. I'm not an expert on New York politics, but as you said, though, Stan, yeah, he's doing an excellent job managing what's happening in New York, and the optics of him even dropping out of being the governor to run for president certainly wouldn't look very good on his part and would probably hurt his political capital as well.
Hey, have a good day.
Hey, thanks for the phone call there, Stan. Yeah, I've heard this proposed by some Democrats saying, hey, let's get Andrew Cuomo in there instead of Joe Biden. And it's very unrealistic that would happen, just because I'm talking about the political capital perspective. His stock would probably plummet to some degree if he were to say, eh, you know what, during the middle of a pandemic, I'm not going to be the governor anymore. I'm going to run for president. I think that would rub a lot of people the wrong way. I think it's just one of those cases where the grass is always greener on the other side, where people like the idea of Cuomo right now until it actually happens. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. A few more stories with presidential politics, and this one actually comes from a voicemail that was left by one of our callers, Teresa, who had some kind words for us here at the station. And Teresa had a question about this alliance between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, because Teresa was, at the beginning, a Bernie Sanders supporter, and obviously, she's disappointed that he dropped out of the race, but she is a little encouraged by the fact that it looks like Bernie and Biden are going to be working together to craft positions. So the two men said they would form task forces on issues including the economy, education, immigration, healthcare, criminal justice, and climate change. I would be a little skeptical on how much Bernie would move the dial on some of Joe Biden's positions, but I suppose it's a little bit more open than what happened when Bernie Sanders dropped out and Hillary Clinton was the nominee, because there was certainly no love lost between those two. But I would still be skeptical on how much he could move the dial. But I suppose if he does make Biden even a little more progressive on some issues, that could be a good thing. I know, Eric, yeah, you were a Bernie supporter. What are your thoughts on the idea of those two working together and forming coalitions and task forces?
I'm not super optimistic there will be any actual changes, but there is the truth that Hillary Clinton does not like Bernie Sanders, and she's made no secret about that.
I don't think Bernie likes her very much either, yeah.
But Bernie and Biden are actually like legitimately friends. When you say, oh, this is my friend Joe Biden, he was being sincere. So maybe he has an in? I don't know.
And I will give Joe Biden credit for this. He seems to get along with every politician, which has its advantages in terms of trying to get legislation passed. Now, of course, that can also backfire against you when maybe you can become a little too friendly with some Republicans who might not have your best interests in mind. But it remains to be seen what will happen with this task force that is going to be set up between Bernie and Biden. I suppose, as I was saying, it's certainly better than, well, the dynamic we had with Bernie and Hillary. But do appreciate the voicemail from Teresa asking about this. I just don't know if we can quite answer this right now until we see more details about it.
Either way, Biden has to do something, I think, to win over the progressive wing of the Democrats.
And I think that's going to come down to not so much him working together with Bernie Sanders on crafting positions or setting up task forces. It all comes down to who he picks as the vice presidential nominee.
Who could he possibly pick?
It's not going to be Elizabeth Warren.
Because it's not going to be Sanders. I don't know if there's I don't know who he could pick that would win people back over.
I've heard the idea of Warren being thrown around as a potential vice presidential nominee, but I think that's unlikely because, well, A, Biden and Warren don't exactly have the warmest history between those two. They don't exactly espouse similar political positions. And I think the bigger issue, though, in terms of why Biden would not pick Elizabeth Warren is the fact that, well, Massachusetts has a Republican governor. And that's significant because if Biden were elected president and Elizabeth Warren as vice president, that would mean you would have a vacancy in the Senate for Elizabeth Warren's seat. And who gets appointed to that Senate seat? Well, that's determined by the governor. And the current governor of Massachusetts is Republican Charlie Baker. Now, Baker is one of the more moderate Republicans, but ultimately he would still likely pick a GOP member to take over in the Senate. And that becomes significant since, well, the Senate is likely to be very close after 2020. Right now it's a 53-47 majority for the Republicans, although the map is a little bit more friendly for Democrats this year. So, yeah, the margins in the Senate could become very close, and even losing just one Democratic seat, whether that's Elizabeth Warren or someone else, could certainly be significant. Let's get one call in before we head to our break. We got Rich in Minneapolis who wants to chime in on the Biden-Bernie alliance. Rich, what are you thinking about today?
Well, what I'm thinking about is Bernie, the way he might feel that he's a little bit responsible for the debacle of that last election by not, you know, once it was determined that Hillary was the person, and he was still really bitter and didn't endorse her and held on, maybe he realizes that he's partly responsible for that complete abomination that is now our president. And so I'm sure they do like each other, you know, to a degree, but I'm sure Bernie still feels like he is the one that would do the most for the American people. And however, I'm sure he's letting some of it go because of possibly a little bit of guilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but, that's my point.
Yeah, I think you could be right about that. And I think another factor in that as well is that the Bernie versus Hillary debate of 2016, I think everyone would agree, was certainly a lot more contentious than the current Bernie versus Biden debate. And part of that probably has to do with the fact that we had, of course, many more candidates in the 2020 cycle than 2016. Maybe things would have been much more nasty the whole time if it was just Biden and Bernie as largely the only two candidates. But I still do think it helps that those two guys do work together because, yeah, overall, Bernie and Hillary Clinton certainly didn't have any chemistry between the two. You could kind of tell legitimately that both of them didn't like each other. Going back to VP picks, though, Eric, you were bringing up, well, who could he pick? I'm not sure Kamala Harris is necessarily going to do a lot for him when you look at her history as the Attorney General of California.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that's going to do a lot to energize progressives.
No.
What do you think about Stacey Abrams, maybe?
To get progressives? I don't know.
I don't think that would do it. The only thing I could think with Stacey Abrams is that ultimately we don't know a lot about her policy positions, which is both good and bad. It could be good in the sense that, well, it probably would be more progressive potentially than having an Amy Klobuchar or a Gretchen Whitmer or a Kamala Harris on the ballot. But, of course, the negative is we still don't know many of her policy positions, so maybe she could be a potential VP candidate. Ultimately, I think it's going to be her or Kamala Harris. I'm guessing it's probably going to be Harris that's going to be the VP nominee. But he's supposed to be announcing, the rumor is, at some point this week or next week. But it's certainly going to be a very, very important pick. But as you alluded to, Eric, yeah, I'm not sure there's really anyone out there who can energize the progressive base. So maybe the next goal would be just don't alienate the progressive base. Because at least going back to 16, Tim Kaine did nothing for, well, really in any aspect. He didn't energize moderates, and he certainly rubbed a lot of progressives the wrong way. So the bar is at least low for Biden to pick a VP nominee as long as he gets someone at least better than Tim Kaine.
At least for me personally, it's not about the VP. He has to outline a single plan he has that is progressive in nature.
You don't think it's important for the VP? Because I still think he's only going to serve one term. I think it's very likely that VP is probably going to be the nominee in 2024.
But I don't think vice presidents usually have that much power. And, I mean, will you even have the, like, incumbent advantage as a VP? Maybe a little bit.
As an incumbent VP, I think you might. You would certainly have the backing of the DNC and the incumbent president. I don't think Biden, in a 2024 nominating convention, if he were to drop out, would endorse someone other than his vice president. I think there could certainly be some power there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back for our final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
The British are coming! The British are coming! Hey, you there! I'm Paul Revere! The British are coming! Where is everyone?
Ben Franklin dispatched the evacuation warning on Facebook. Didn't you get it?
Hi, I'm Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If your marketing is behind the times, contact us today online at socialmediamn.com or at 763-244-4058. We can help your business message get dispatched and selected on social media and Google search. We offer uncomplicated, results-driven, and affordable internet marketing solutions for businesses of all sizes. SocialMediaMN.com or 763-244-4058.
Hi, Gregory Rich, owner of Habitation Furnishing and Design and host of Drinkin' the Style, Saturdays at 7 and Sundays at 5. You know, we're all sitting at home right now, and chances are you've noticed a thing or two that you wish you could change. Well, the Habitation Design staff is here to help. Right now, we're offering free virtual interior design services. It works like this. You guys are home, we're all at home. Let's schedule a virtual walkthrough of your space. Using FaceTime, Zoom, or Skype, one of our degreed professional interior designers will take a look, tell you precisely how to measure your room, then provide you with specific product recommendations, a design plan, and everything you need to make your space beautiful and functional. So we've all got the time. Why don't we take advantage of it? Call Habitation at 952-426-3548. That's 952-426-3548 and schedule your virtual design appointment today.
Welcome back to the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Got to follow up on something I mentioned at the end of yesterday's show, how Florida currently has a stay-at-home order, but Republican Governor Ron DeSantis did declare that the World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE, was an essential service so they could continue taping their shows as time goes on. The reason being is that the WWE is currently running empty arena shows and they have a home base in Florida, so that's where they've been recording their shows, and this is the justification from DeSantis. Amid the coronavirus pandemic, he says people are starved for content and people are chomping at the bit. If you think about it, we have never had a period like this in modern history where you have so little new content. So that's his justification for somehow declaring professional wrestling an essential service. And by the way, I've seen some of those empty arena shows. As I've mentioned before, I've streamed pro wrestling in the past. Wrestling doesn't work in empty arenas. It's just super awkward to watch when there's no crowd response whatsoever.
Yeah, that seems like a main component of the event is
exactly
the feedback back and forth.
And one final story. How about this, Eric? Donald Trump wants his own radio show. At least he did. He wanted to have a two-hour daily program that would include callers from ordinary Americans. What could possibly go wrong with that?
I wish that happened.
I so wish it did, too. I'm sure, like, after day one, they would probably have some pretty strict call screeners.
Yeah.
But that would be amazing.
It could be funny just hearing Trump call everyone losers.
I haven't talked to Chad about this, but I will offer this to Donald Trump. If he wants a show on AM 950 and he takes unscreened calls, he's more than welcome to host his show on AM 950. We will be his flagship. All right, Matt McNeil is coming up next. I'll talk to you tomorrow.